Good morning. Today is February the 27th. The year is 2006. It is 7:37, and you are listening to KBOO FM Portland, Oregon. And this is More Talk Radio with Cecil and Celeste. Good morning.
You mean this is not Portland, Maine?
It could be.
Oh, man, I got off the wrong turn in my sleep, apparently.
Well, you know, apparently there are several Portlands.
Yeah, as a matter of fact, you're right. There's a Portland and some other East Coast town that's you wouldn't expect to be Portland.
I was doing one of those web searches type of things, and I just put in Portland, and numerous Portland.
Well, I don't understand the rationale behind it unless there's a different concept of port that maybe I'm not familiar with. Which is entirely possible. I don't know everything. Well, I don't even know what I don't know.
And that is something we should advise some of us in leadership positions, to know what they know and to know what they don't know.
Well, to have an idea that they don't know everything. Let's just leave it at that.
But we don't know everything, but we do know some things, and we have some announcements for those of you who are interested in what's happening in our community. So we'll share.
Well, I'm missing half of them. You know, I don't know if I left them sitting on my printer or not. Well, I can say this, though. This takes place tomorrow. It says, if you want to participate in the next citywide community budget forum with a focus on community development and public safety service areas, then you should be at the IRCO building at 10301 Northeast Gleason, that's at 103rd and Northeast Gleason, on Tuesday, February 28th, that's tomorrow, from 6:30 to 8:30 p.m. There will be child and interpretation assistance. If you need those services, please call 503-823-5288 for other special needs. You can also call 503-823-4515. The issues are, again, a focus on community development and public safety service areas. So get to this meeting at the IRCO building tomorrow, 6:30 to 8:30. I know that the MAX goes very close to there. It stops at the Gateway or, let's see, at 108th. You could probably get off at 102nd, too. Mm-hmm. The Gateway or 102nd, either one of those will take you within relative walking distance. Mm-hmm. And I think from the Gateway Transit Center, I believe the 15 might take you pretty close.
Excellent.
You know, so that's some information. There will be other meetings coming up regarding the budget. March 31st, there'll be the City Council Budget Team recommendations released. But this is one time when you get a chance to get into the whole process of reviewing what the city budget is within a very specific focus and having your needs expressed. I've participated in them both as a private individual, a citizen, and as part of various boards. And I tell you that it's very informative. It's an opportunity to get in and find out just what goes on with regard to the budget. I think it's informative. I think you should go.
Okay. Well, that's an important event that's happening tomorrow evening. Other things that are happening in the community that you might want to be aware of are...
Well, I don't have the date. This is the one that I'm scratching my head about. But I do know that there will be another opportunity to meet the mayor on April 15th at Talking Drum Books. Talking Drum Books and Restaurant. And that is at 44. Okay, it's in the Walnut Park Plaza, which is at Killingsworth and Northeast Martin Luther King. And it's on Saturday, April 15th. But I do not have the time. However, if you call 503-823-4000, that's information and referral, they should be able to tell you what time the mayor will be there in Northeast Portland.
Is that usually like an afternoon or morning?
Yeah. You know, I don't even want to put anything into people's minds because I don't remember. That's one of them that I'm tearing up my paper pile here looking for because I know I packed it.
Okay.
I don't see it. That's not good.
Well, that is Saturday, April 15th, which mm-hmm. is 2 days before your taxes are due, which is April 17th. So you have a...
yeah, you have a chance to go in and let the mayor know what you think about some of the school tax proposals that have come about.
Or might come about. Or haven't come about.
You know, a good chance to go and argue with somebody about, you know... And I was watching some television show where they were talking about Oregon's lotto being used to fund schools, and I snickered, you know, and I'm thinking, boy, this is somebody who did not do their research.
Mm-hmm.
And this is like a 2005, I think, or it might have been produced in 2006. And I'm just laughing because I'm thinking, yeah, right, somebody didn't do the research. But, you know, you might ask that question. After all, that was the way it was sold to us, wasn't it?
Yeah.
You know, mm-hmm. rather than be accused of being naive, you will be someone trying to hold us accountable. Hey.
Oh, right.
I love that look on your face. It's like, yeah, right.
You know, many of us had speculated in years past about bemoaning the fact of the political drift of our country. And we talked about, you know, how... You know, other countries look more attractive, and up until recently, our neighbor up north looked attractive. But you know, they took a rightward shift in their recent election. So many are looking at our neighbors to the south, and there are exciting things that are happening in Latin America these days. Many of you are familiar with. What's happening in Venezuela, in Brazil, and other countries in South America. And it's an opportunity for us to learn more about the Latin America's shift to the left. There will be an update about what's happening in Brazil with a representative of Brazil's landless workers movement, a film followed by a presentation, The Landless Thought American Path. It depicts the birth, the path, and the struggles of the movement for land distribution, human rights, and food sovereignty in the last 20 years. This presentation takes place on Tuesday, a week from Tuesday, March 7th at 7 p.m. at Liberty Hall, which is located 311 North Ivy Street. The representative is Andreas Ferreira, who will also give a presentation at local colleges. This is sponsored by several organizations, Friends of the Landless Workers Movement, Portland Jobs with Justice, and BOS Workers' Rights Education Project. And for more information on this event on March 7th, you may contact by email LucyCuba2005@yahoo.com. For those who would use a telephone, the number is 360-259-1879. And of course, this information will be at the front desk, because I'm sure very few people got all the information about that.
No, well, we're just a cornucopia of information today. Looks like two more really quick announcements, right. And we'll have this also at the front desk. This year, there will be a full-day training opportunity for neighborhood safety given through the city, and that will be Saturday, April 29th. The conference is titled Ready, Safe, Go, and it will be taking place at PCC Sylvania Campus. For more information, you can call and register 503-823-4519. This is also available on the city website, portlandonline.com. In the little search corner on the left-hand column, just type in Ready, Safe, Go. And then this one is the one that kind of tickles me, because I want to find out a little more about them, because I've got some youth who might be involved. There has been recently a charter approved by the Portland Public School Board that will allow for the Leadership and Entrepreneurship Public Charter High School to open and start accepting students entering the ninth grade school year next year. There is no tuition or admission requirements. The school is designed to provide a rigorous college prep curriculum with leadership and entrepreneurship focus. So this is going to be a fabulous opportunity, especially for young folks that maybe don't do as well in the, we said, customary or traditional classroom method. The teachers will use project-based and interdisciplinary learning, and students will gain real-world experiences and internships, service learning, and mentoring. The school will also have an extended day, starts at 9 a.m., lets out at 4:30 p.m., and an extended year, 190 school days in 12 months, with large amounts of extra tutoring and academic support for all students. So who are the students that this would really serve, since this sounds really intriguing? Those who struggle academically because they lack the necessary academic supports. Those who underachieve because they are bored, disengaged, or not challenged in their current school environment. Or those who feel alienated in large comprehensive high schools. So for more information, you can contact Adam Reed, R-E-I-D, and he's at the LEP High School. That's the Learning and Entrepreneurship High School. He's the Director of Community Programs and Public Relations. And the phone number is 503-730-9442. Again, that's Adam Reed, 503-730-9442.
And those are some of the announcements we have for mm-hmm. you. We encourage you to share with us announcements that are of interest to the community. Drop us a line. Let us know what is happening in the community, and we will make every effort to ensure that
we'll get as many as we can out.
Excellent. Mm-hmm. Again, let me remind you that you are listening to More Talk Radio with Cecil and Celeste. We were away last week. We have returned this week. I suppose last week was a federal holiday, and we celebrated or remember or memorialize or commemorated or mourned President's Day.
I'm a little deaf right now. I've got a ringing in my ears.
Ringing in your ear.
But, well, I don't remember if I looked at it as celebrating necessary presidents, although we like to think that there was some honor and some service in the position that's been rendered from that office. We like to hold on to that thought.
And
I love that look on your face.
And we'll continue to hold out hope.
When you say it like that, it almost sounds as though you really haven't seen any indication that there's been any honor or service.
Well, you know,
historically,
one thing, you know, when we get into the heart of our conversation this morning, we might talk more about that.
Okay.
But perhaps we should.
Well, let's lead off. So, what's the heart of the conversation? We picked two topics today. So.
We picked two topics today.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And it's. Well, before I get to my topic, I uh-huh. want to get on my...
Oh, on your soapbox?
On my soapbox.
Go right ahead. Let me dust it off for you. There you go.
Now, remember, at some point in the past, we've had uh-huh. conversation with, I think, one gentleman, and I remember, who had a concern about driving and getting his... being relieved of his driver's license.
Of his license.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
Well, I have a... very deep concern right now for that gentleman and others.
Okay.
I saw or heard on the news that gas prices are going down.
Going down.
The lowest prices in the nation is in Portland, Oregon.
Oh, and at one time we had the highest.
One time we had the highest. Mm-hmm. So gas prices are going down. Mm-hmm. My soapbox, once again, is mm-hmm. that people who drive cars are getting some relief. Mm-hmm. And those of us who use public transportations are not.
No, you're not. As a matter of fact, the rates just went up.
Yes.
So, you know, I have issue with reactionary rate raising. Ooh, I got that out early
wow.
on a Monday morning. Hey. But no, but seriously, I do appreciate that that it does cost more money to run public transit when the gasoline, the fuel prices are higher. But this reactionary rate raising without any... concerned for the fact that many people who do drive choose to do so because they don't want to incur the expense or maybe can't incur the expense of an automobile, or it's just not feasible to drive. Some people live close enough that they can catch, believe me, I would take mass transit if I could. So TriMet, are you going to drop the rates now that the gas is cheaper? Or are you going to say, no, we really must wait and see how the market will bear?
We'll see, but I wouldn't hold my breath. Related to that, and you might want to talk about the rates, but related to that is, has been some discussion in the public newspaper about TriMet and about fares and about those who ride TriMet. There have been some concerns about, for example, Fairless Square,
mm-hmm.
Also about people paying fares and not paying fare, and how hazardous riding TriMet is. I think in the Portland Tribune, there have been a couple of articles written in recent weeks, one by a law enforcement officer who stated that he is afraid of riding the MAX.
Mm-hmm.
He was on a MAX with his children and I think with his older parent. And he was concerned because there were young people who, I think he said, I'm not sure, was acting like young people, loud and boisterous, and how people felt intimidated by
mm-hmm.
them and did not challenge them. And he went on to not only talk about that incident, but just talking about how people many people ride TriMet who, first of all, don't pay fares, and that encourages a certain element of our population, which prevents other people from riding using public transportation. So
mm-hmm.
I guess my question is, one, for people to reflect on that, more particularly, how safe is public transportation, and whether or not the TriMet should use its law enforcement ability to be more strict on checking people with their whether or not they paid or not, or whether or not we need to look more expansively about the role of public transportation generally. So that's a concern about the role of public transportation and whether or not people feel safe on it or not, and whether or not I'll just leave it at that for the moment.
Well, you know, there's a couple of interesting points about public transportation. One is that we have the Fairless Square as a means of bolstering revenue, you know, getting more shoppers out.
Mm-hmm.
And so the business community has supported Fairless Square. With the extension of it, the idea was to help, especially when you have people who come in as tourists and then they want to expand at least to the Lloyd area mm-hmm. because they didn't want to be left out. And that's not a comprehensive statement, you know, understand.
Mm-hmm.
This is kind of like the thumbnail sketch, y'all. So don't take me to task because I missed some point. And so the business community really, I'm sure, wants to find a way to make this work. One thing has been to increase security on the buses, on the MAX, and at the boarding platforms.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Now, how successful they've been, well, that really remains to be seen. The people who ride need to really call in and give their input and let them know what they think. I mean, people who ride it should know best what is needed. To their credit, they do have some programs. They work in Northeast Portland. They have what they call the Rider Advocates, who is a group of people who ride the buses on lines in North and Northeast Portland that have historically had some issues. And I know they've increased security.
You mean the buses or the bus routes?
They're on the bus routes.
No, you say had issues. I'm not sure who.
Oh, the bus routes. The bus routes. The people had complained about the bus routes having some issues.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and I know that they also have, they use a security company, a private security company, and then there is a branch of police that work with TriMet.
Mm-hmm.
And so to that end, I know they're working to improve the integration of services. You know, and I know for some people, well, that seems a little intrusive, but then, you know, the point is it intrusive or is it keeping you secure? The other thing that's interesting about TriMet, and I didn't find this out until I became an independent contractor and I have to pay my taxes, is that we all pay a tax for TriMet. Yes. There is money that comes out of our income that goes to TriMet. Yes. You're not aware of it because as a rule, your employer pays it for you if you are a paid regular employee. If you are an independent contractor, as I was for a while, you pay it yourself, and then you become very pointedly aware of what you're paying. So, you know, we do subsidize TriMet, you know, if you live within the metro area, and metro being that governing anomaly that seems to exist, I think, only one other place in the country, and that is kind of it's not a county a governing body or a city governing body or state. It's a, well, I don't want to say anomaly again because that sounds a little pejorative, but it's just different. Okay, it's a hybrid. There we go. But, you know, when you say that, you make me, see, I was waffling because I had 2 points I wanted to bring up. And now I'm trying to figure out which one I should bring up. And now, I'll do this one. One of the issues arising out of riding on TriMet and having security has to do with the point I made about it seeming really intrusive. Mm-hmm. Because if you're going to have fare inspectors got to inspect you, okay? They have to figure out how they want to inspect you. Do they, you know? And I've been told by people, well, you know, if you're riding and you're dressed, quote unquote, as a professional person, you know, you could probably skate through and never pay, you know, because you're being, here's that ugly word again, you're being profiled in a sense, okay? If you look a little scruffy, you know, and it doesn't matter. Maybe you've been painting the house or digging ditches or you don't really care. You're off from work and you're headed home. And they have whatever reason, something triggers in your appearance, you are much more likely to be targeted somebody who perhaps hasn't paid fair. So, you know, the issue that I'm looking at, one of the things that I wanted to talk about was our ideas of privacy. Is privacy in this society becoming a thing of the past or perhaps overrated out of the common good or the need for safety or the illusion of safety, you know? And in some countries, you don't have this sense of privacy that we have here in America. And so my topic has to do with the whole idea of is privacy even real anymore? Is it something that we try to hold up an illusion of? If you watch some of the ads on television, there's one that talks about getting loans, house mortgage loans. And one of the signs in the yard says demand privacy. And I'm tickled because, you know, you're sharing your very personal information, financial information, with a host of organizations. You're giving them permission, as we say, to look at that. Now, bear in mind that people don't really have to have permission to look at your credit history. As a matter of fact, they can do that and do it without your permission to determine whether or not you can continue to get car insurance or electricity or telephone or that new cell phone or a job. So how much privacy do we really have? And then when we talk in terms of security, well, that's another step into what we see as our personal bubble, you know. Is it an illusion? Is it real? What are we looking for? How do we really define privacy in this current society that we live in? And is it something that eventually we're going to have to let go of?
You're listening to KBOO. This is More Talk Radio with Cecil and Celeste. We've shared a couple of topics. One is the sense of privacy in this post-capitalist, post-modernist era, and also the role of TriMet. How secure is it? How effective is that on transportation? Two things before I get to a caller. You mentioned the fare inspectors.
Uh-huh.
I mean, the article in the Portland Tribune.
Uh-huh.
The author talks about a fare inspector who the train stopped at a stop. The fare inspector came in. He saw the young people, was apparently frightened, looked around, and then walked off of the train.
I'm trying not to laugh, but, you know, the immortal words of one of my childhood heroes pops up, and I say this both seriously and tongue-in-cheek, and the cartoon hero was Super Chicken. Super Chicken had a statement, and I won't say I live and die by it, but it did kind of shape my sense of responsibility. Super Chicken used to say, "I knew the job was dangerous when I took it." Okay? Security implies that there's going to be a measure of confrontation against those forces that would make something insecure. If you don't feel up to the job, don't take it. Okay, that's some strong words, that's true. But number two, you should have a certain expectation of being able to handle your job, you know. So if you walk on board and you see that there's a bunch of rowdy youngsters, is turning off the proper responses, should you stay on board and call for backup and try to express some measure of calm and civility and control?
Well, the other issue related to that is in terms of training and support.
Yes.
I was somewhat concerned by a piece I saw, I think, in the Oregonian recently. Was talking about TriMet and was talking specifically about drivers, and they had a list of
how they stay disengaged,
who received the most complaints, who received the most compliments. And at the same time, it's very easy, I think, to critique or criticize these workers, but also be aware of the enormous job they have to do. I mean, for example, I assume a driver, I don't know how many tons a bus weighs. And
enough.
Enough that person's involved with, and a lot of things he's concerned with. So those are the couple of topics, and it is approximately 8:03. We miss our 8 o'clock.
Well, we're within the five-minute grace period.
Okay, so the FCC won't?
Hopefully.
Okay, but we are while we are still on the air, we want to encourage you to give us a call. Our numbers here are 503-381-8187.
Okay. I didn't pick up the baton good on that. Well, you know, in driver's defense, you're right. They have to focus on that bus and making sure they convey people safely. I don't think it should be just on them to provide security. Mm-hmm. But, okay, so who then? So then maybe TriMet needs to hire somebody who can handle it, who's been trained with the proper skills.
Yeah. And then this whole thing about privacy. So, you know, how inclusive do you become? So,
We have
a caller online.
Thank them for their patience.
And we'll go to that caller. Good morning.
Good morning.
Happy Monday.
Well, yeah, it is. And despite the early grayness, I'm good with it. It's yes, above it ground.
Yes, it is. Well, I want to thank you for the plug that you provided early on this morning. I'd like to talk about the security on buses and the role of everybody toward our young people on public transport. I think besides the occasional driver who gets into confrontations with 84-year-old women and incurs severe liability, and the cameras that they carry on board, those really help out in those situations. They catch the driver in the act of violent confrontations. It's excellent. Anyway, aside from incidents like that, the rare incident, the kids that get on the buses, they are expressing needs to be integrated into our society. They're outgoing. They're putting themselves out there. They're saying, hey, look at me. Tell me who I am. Validate me. We as a community have a great opportunity to interface with these kids on those occasions. You know, it won't take too much time out of our day. We're on the way anyway. This is the perfect time to pat those kids on the back and say, hey, welcome to the world. You know, you're going to have your place in it, and this is my place. You know, we can introduce ourselves. We can lock those kids into our embrace, into our community embrace. I don't think that any of us are doing our job if we let those kind of opportunities go by. And then, as to the privacy issue, that's your separate topic today, right? I wanted to hit on that and the breaks that you didn't mention, the breaks that travelers are getting at the gas pump. Not only are drivers, but the public who travels is now not only able to get a break on their motor vehicle fuel because they get the refund on all the taxes, but according to the optional titling rule that ODOT adopted last year, if we choose to title our vehicles, well, they become subject to all the laws and they have to wear those license plates. But if we don't choose,
then we get a ticket and we go to jail.
Well, that's changing. You know the guy down there at the Monmouth Police Training Academy, John Menace? He used to be our local one of our local heroes here, Portland Police Bureau member. Well, John Menace's wife spoke to this issue, and she was the Speaker of the House, is the Speaker of the House. But she has put a letter in my hand saying that there never has been a law that applied to the public's use of the highway. So with that letter having been generated by his old lady, John is now revising the Police Training Academy curriculum.
Mm-hmm.
And we're working on that. And I'd like to let people know that we can't isolate the law enforcement element of our community either. We have to enfold them in our embrace and make them know that they're welcome public servants, you know, that have a legitimate role. We can't say that you guys are fascist pigs. We have to say you have a role here. It's a peace officer, and we have statutes for you to enforce. It's just that we want you to be careful about who you enforce them against.
Great. Well, thank you for your call.
Well, let me give you
for the details
on this. I know this is kind of subject matter that takes a long time,
mm-hmm.
but we have committee meetings on the first and third Saturdays of every month.
Okay.
Over at 19th and Jefferson at Bud Clark's Goose Hollow Inn Coffee House. The Committee for the Appropriate Enforcement of Motor Vehicle Laws is going to help people come to grips with the changing reality that the public has always had the right. Yeah, maybe it's not changing, but the awareness is changing, that the public has always had the right to use the highway. They don't pay the same privilege taxes as drivers, and you've accurately characterized drivers as the ones that run the TriMet buses.
Actually, I didn't say that.
Well, I think Cecil was talking about drivers.
No, he didn't say that either.
Well, who was calling the people that run the TriMet buses drivers? Wasn't one of you folks just...
Well, perhaps, but
yeah,
continue.
Yeah, those are drivers, the people that transport passengers.
Okay,
and,
well,
and
I assume
freight,
that
right?
You meant driver from a different perspective, as
well,
in the moving force.
Well, in terms of case law, drivers are those who are employed to use or operate a motor vehicle, right? So the TriMet people, the people that run those buses, those are drivers that transport passengers because those people that get on are paying a fare. So they're actually passengers.
Okay, we need to
move along. So.
All right, well, if anybody else has got anything more cogent to say on this, I'm looking forward to it, so you take their calls. Thanks.
Okay.
Bye.
And those of you who are interested might attend that gathering.
You know, I thought he meant as in driving force,
mm-hmm.
you know, or mover and shaker, policy maker. So my bad.
Okay.
Semantics did it again.
One thing that the caller mentioned earlier on was in terms of engaging one another, and it sounded reasonable. But let me just again take on the perspective of I think this writer who said he. Again, he identified himself as a law enforcement officer. He was with his elderly parent and children,
mm-hmm.
and these young people who were loud,
rowdy,
mm-hmm. and you know,
and perhaps looking to be engaged, maybe positively, maybe not.
And he feared that they wanted to be engaged in a not positive.
Mm.
Mannered, and
okay.
so he refused to engage them because of, in terms of personal safety,
mm-hmm.
safety issues. But I, again, we certainly need to be a community and engage with one another. But there are some questions that are raised. Are how do we live in community? And for those of you who, I would encourage those of you who use public transportation, for your perspective about how citizens interact with one another at the bus stop, the MAC station, and on those vehicles themselves. So give us a call at 503-231-8187. And if you're concerned about privacy, which is a long, interesting issue, because as you were describing it, you know, I was thinking, well, we have no privacy.
We really don't. We have an illusion of privacy.
And what was scary for me is that we all say that, we all acknowledge that, and like that's the way it is, and that's the way it has to be.
And that's the way, well, you know, and the question is, in terms of a concept, or is it a principle, what exactly is privacy? What is the expectation we have? And you don't have to answer both of these if you call. You know, just pick the one that moves to you. With regard to privacy, we talk in terms of privacy in a number of arenas, whether that be privacy of your personal information, privacy in your home, your domicile, privacy of person when you're moving about and you're associating. And so we have different ideas. There's different levels of privacy. But the whole idea of privacy maybe, again, might be an illusion. At one point, maybe we did have it. But now with the electronic and information sharing age, there's not a lot. I mean, we have all kinds of rules. There are rules that govern how much of your medical history can be allowed, but they can be overridden. I mean, the fact that we've got the NSA looking at various pieces of information from phone calls, bank accounts, you know, your library records, whatever, speaks to the fact that privacy really is an illusion.
So how much is privacy or what we say is privacy, because it conflicts with, I think, in terms of community, in terms of, is it some sort of enlightenment concept in terms of privacy of the individual? Because why is it that we need to guard our privacy? Why do I need my
privacy? Well, on one level, and I can just speak to this just really briefly, you do want to guard certain aspects of your selfhood because somebody else can usurp that. Right now we have what we call ID theft, identity theft. And so people can steal parts of your identity or your whole identity and form another conglomerate or just take over your identity and wreak havoc with your credit, wreak havoc with your economic security.
Well, but that's perhaps, I think, is I'm asking in terms of maybe we need to revisit that concept of individualism because it's just enough.
So, in other words, maybe you're thinking differently in terms of...
Well, I think in some societies, you think of, you interact with the world in terms of the group, whether it's a tribe, the family. Uh-huh. That's your entrance into the world. So this concept of privacy, of individualism, is certainly different. So, you know, we have a couple of callers online.
I have some other aspects of privacy, but we let's hear what our callers have to say, too. Good morning. You're on the air.
Morning.
Yep, it's you.
So I like that guy that was just on, actually, the driver guy.
Mm-hmm. I like that, the driver guy.
He's really ahead of the game on this, and we need to sit back and really realize what he's talking about. And the reality is that when this country gets into the energy crunch, I don't mean to go off topic just real quick, but the energy crunch is coming up. It's inevitable. And in order to lock down the country and turn it into what they have it as six territories, they need the Patriot Act. In order to do the Patriot Act, they have to control driving. And we must know our rights with our driving privileges and the driving rights. And what we're doing now is they're...
Okay, caller,
so
you used up about a minute of your conversation on an off-topic item.
So what I'm saying, well, that's my prerogative, but so what happens...
No, actually, we're trying to stick to topic today,
right.
Okay?
So we need to listen to people and not say, okay, well, maybe he's too far off. We just must understand our rights, and privacy is a right, and it's a privilege as well, but we're living in a scared time now. We have who runs the country? The religious right does, and they are scared, and they're scared, and it tells you when they follow a book that has no beginning or no end. So we have people that are scared that are willing to invade people's rights of privacy because it makes them feel better. And what we're dealing with is we're dealing with a mass consciousness. And it is fear and enabling. And so what we have to do is you worry about yourself and privacy and just be conscious of what's going on around you. Know that you have to be a beacon of light in the darkness that's surrounding us, and we have to be strong for the weak.
I'm not sure I understand you, so I'm going to ask you to explain it a little bit more. Are you advocating, you talk about the religious right controls the country, and they...
Well, it's a mass consciousness.
Mass consciousness. And what's this about? We should hold on to privacy, or...
We've got to hold on to our privacy. And
how do we do that?
And how do we define privacy?
You know what? That's... you know, I guess in the public there is no private.
Oh, okay.
Right?
I don't know. Maybe there isn't. I'm trying to think maybe not.
If you're public, there is no private, but they sure are taking the public and turning it private.
But not to tie you up in knots, Carla, but when you say defend our privacy, then my question is, what are we defending? What are we defending? And we have a vague idea against whom we're defending it, but what exactly are we defending when you say defend your privacy?
That's exactly what it takes us to get together as grassroots and start defining the word, just like they've done with our organic. They've destroyed the word organic. So now you've got to come up with a new word that has the meaning that you're trying to find out and has the that stuff. So organic is gone, privacy is gone, public is gone, but we know what private means. It's stealing from the public to make private for profit.
Okay.
So that's where, so we must redefine the word and patent it.
Okay.
So take care.
Okay, but well, thank you for sharing.
And
that's one definition of public and privacy. Our numbers again are 503-231-8187. And we'll go to the next caller. What insights do you have to share with us? Good morning.
Hi, this is Chuck.
Hi, Chuck.
Just to pick up on the caller, that's Richard, I believe, who was talking about driving. And I think privacy is a huge, huge issue. But I think there's a parallel on his remarks. And his complaint, as I understand it, is that the state is invading people's privacy to use the roads, the driveways. And for him, the car is an extension of the horse. And just as the guy on the horse was always free to use the roads between towns, and there was never a tax on it and was always free to do that, then so today should a guy in a car have that same freedom. And so I think his complaint is that the state is invading...
Well, caller, how about we talk about what you want to talk about rather than what he was talking about?
I want to talk about this.
Okay, now what does this have to do exactly with TriMed or privacy?
Because the state is invading poor people's privacy when they criminalize them driving a car without insurance or the appropriate documentation that the caller is claiming was fraudulently hoisted upon the public.
Okay. I want you to share with us your definition of
privacy
and why is it privilege?
Well, privacy is a liberal idea, classical liberal idea, that you are, as an individual, should not be encumbered by the power of the state. Conceivably, this could also be, you could take the idea that even a community could invade your privacy by gossiping about you and making negative rumor remarks that aren't based on any truth.
Okay, now given that, you're saying that privacy is a function of government?
Privacy is
Yes,
it could be. It could be a function of community. We are social creatures. We live in the context of others. Privacy has to do with how much you want people to know about you, how much you want to not be known about others. It's highly relativistic. You have to discuss it on a case-by-case basis, I think. I think it's really going to be difficult.
So we don't have a cultural idea of what privacy is then in this country? Because that's our point of reference.
I think we have, on case-by-case basis, ideas. I think...
we don't have a universal idea of what privacy is in this country.
I don't think you're going to find a universal, absolute definition of privacy.
I think
the guy who likes pornography and can go on to his internet at home is experiencing privacy. But when his activity is tracked by the National Security Agency and that information is used against him somehow, then he knows his privacy has been violated.
What about the person who likes pornography, who, say, likes who watch child pornography and uses the internet to do some horrendous thing against someone.
Okay, then that's what the caller before pointed out, that we are public. That for the moment that guy has crossed the line. He is now engaged in activity which is criminal. It's a criminal offense to get your rocks off around a child who's being exploited by an adult.
So
that's a crime. And well,
what
about the privacy to do that?
Okay, now what if this person doesn't go online and get this information?
What, he goes down to the local bar?
No, just
saying
that...
he goes into the basement of his house where he's got some sex slaves?
I'm just saying procures this without going on to the internet.
He's committed a crime.
Okay.
Who defines the crime, and how is that different from the person who...
Who decides to drive without due license.
Okay, here's the difference.
Mm-hmm.
When we have crimes against child pornography, right?
We have. Yeah.
Okay, mm-hmm. we formally have a law, and that went through the formal deliberative process that we through which we make laws in our society.
Mm-hmm.
Richard Koenig's point about the driving license is that the state of Oregon never did that relative to people who drive a car for the purposes of just getting themselves
around and not
for profit.
Okay, now here's where we have a little difficulty. I don't know that that's true, so I can't really support a conversation about something that you're asserting as a fact,
I
don't know it's true.
You need to listen to the guy and engage
him in dialogue. Well, I mean, I can listen to people and engage in dialogue, but I need to know that this is true.
Well, he says it is.
But he says it is, okay? So what I'm saying is I don't really feel it's appropriate for us to hold up this as the beacon of light when we don't even know. Have you gone and done due research to find out if this is true?
Here's what I've done.
Wait a minute, no, tell me what you've done in terms
of
validating this.
No. But
no,
I don't do Celeste. That's really unfair of
no,
you.
No, that is very fair of me.
No,
I cannot promote this if you haven't done your research to determine whether it's true and you're just supporting him based on the fact that he said so.
Celeste, I have not seen the definitive document that the state claims they have saying that you absolutely must have a driver's license in order to use the roadways.
Now, but you're supporting it as if it is true.
I am agnostic on this, but
you should at least do your research, because you would hold me to that standard. You would not want me to come on the air and say categorically that something is thus and so without having done my research, and I try very hard not to do that.
Okay, Celeste, I'm not being categorical. I am using him as an example. Have I been cut off?
No,
you haven't been. Ooh.
I think you...
Well, he cut himself off, because I was waiting to hear something here. You know, the thing is, and this is my belief. I'm not putting this on Cecil. If I don't know something to be true, I can't get on the air and expound and promote and, you know, otherwise stand on a soapbox and exalt some point that I'm not even sure is true. That is my whole point of this. Mm-hmm. Now, I'm not going to pretend to know everything. Didn't we say that at the beginning of the show? We don't know everything and don't know what we don't know.
I will
say that, you know, if somebody wants to come on and hold this guy up as being on top of it, he needs to have done his research rather than put Richard in this place of an authority.
Well, I think the last conversation represented, I think, the difficulty in these conversations,
mm-hmm.
in that we all begin these conversations from our own point of reference, and
mm-hmm.
For the individual, that's their point of reference. The question is whether or not we all agree on that point of reference. If we do not, how do we engage one another? So for one person, the whole issue of privacy or individualism is become much very complex. But we have a few callers who can give me some insight, so let's go to our next caller. Good morning, and thank you for waiting.
Well, good morning. How are you guys?
Well,
ooh,
it's a beautiful day.
What a what a sensitive hot show this is. Thank you very, very much. Okay, just a couple of quick things.
All right. Okay.
I'm a privacy nut. And I have structured my life in such a way as to ensure as much as I possibly can my personal privacy. I don't have a credit card.
Mm-hmm.
I live in a cash-only world.
Mm-hmm.
All right. I am talking to you from a rotary dial phone.
Mm-hmm.
I will not even think about having a cell phone because I don't want to talk on a megaphone. I don't own a computer. All right, I refuse to go online because I refuse to have my thoughts in cyberspace. Okay.
Why is privacy so important, or how do you define privacy so important to you?
Well, because my life is my business, and I honestly feel that the state doesn't have a right to snoop around in my personal business.
And your personal, again, personal, you, the individual, how large is that circle, personal? Is it your family? Is it your neighbors? Is it who?
Are you talking about my immediate circle of friends?
Well, no, you said privacy, so I mean,
yeah.
You say you are a very private person, so that means you...
No, I'm not a private person,
uh-huh.
All right? But, but I believe that information about me, these are the social security numbers, credit card numbers, yada, 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 is absolutely nobody's business.
So do you participate, for example, social security number?
Uh-huh.
Do you have a social security card? By getting one, are you giving up some of your privacy?
Of course you are.
Okay.
of course you are. It was pointed out to Mr. Roosevelt, who started Social Security, that that a Social Security number is simply part of the tracking system.
Mm-hmm.
And if you would take a look, right, when I was coming up, all right, I didn't have to apply for a Social Security card
mm-hmm.
until I got my first job.
Right.
Nowadays,
well, you can win out the womb now.
Nowadays, you can't even take your own children out of the hospital.
Right. Well, yeah, pretty much like Cecil says, you have to have it out of the womb,
yeah.
Especially if you have any type of government assistance.
You bet. What's with that?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I don't understand that. Mm-hmm. Right. Now it's as far as motor vehicles are concerned, I haven't owned a car in 11 years, and I have no intention of like getting another car. Right? I choose not to encase myself in a steel and glass coffin, right, to drive somewhere, to be isolated from my brothers and sisters.
So how do you get around and how?
A bicycle. I'm an urban cyclist. And I use my bike as much as I can.
And you use your bike on public roads.
Uh-huh.
So you engage with the public in that way.
Uh-huh.
I assume, I hope, that when you use your bike, you might stop at... At stop. So,
my point is
trying to, you know, how do we define privacy, or how private is private?
Okay. I consider myself to be a responsible person. All right. As a cyclist, if I want to be considered part of the traffic pattern, that means that I have to obey all of the laws that pertain to motor vehicle drivers.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So I stop at all stop signs. I stop at all traffic lights. I never, ever, ever jump on the sidewalk to avoid having to stop somewhere, all right?
But why can't I just ride my bike where I want to ride it?
Cecil, look, being a citizen, all right,
uh-huh.
being a citizen means that you have a responsibility, all right?
Mm-hmm.
You have a certain responsibility. You have a responsibility to your community. You have a responsibility to your neighbors, all right? And that's the way I like feel about it.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Look.
So the question is you know I'm not trying to argue with you. I'm just trying for clarification
uh-huh.
in terms of I agree with you as individual we have responsibility for community and some people might say the president for example might say as a responsible person you need to give us all this information.
I don't think so.
Well, yeah, and that's how do we negotiate those different viewpoints.
Okay, well, I draw the line in the sand, all right?
Okay, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, there are things that I'm going to do, all right, as being I consider myself to be an elder of our village, right?
Yes.
right? But the government has no business in my personal business, all right? There are things that I consider to be private and personal, and the government doesn't have any right
to share that or reveal that.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah.
Okay, and just one more thing, okay? Please, my friends, it takes a village to raise a child, all right? It is our responsibility, all right, to reach out to the youth, all right, and to be there for them. We cannot expect our young people to behave like they're sitting in church. I'm sorry, that's totally unacceptable. They're young people, and they're rambunctious, and they're learning about life, but that doesn't make them bad.
I agree. Well, it doesn't make them bad. We just need to find a way, like you said, to engage them and help them constructively see how to use that energy that they have.
It's our responsibility, Celeste.
Yeah. I agree. I agree
totally
wholeheartedly.
Okay. All right?
Hey.
Mm-hmm. Okay, have a wonderful day. Thank you.
All righty.
Hey, thank you. And you know, just one thing. I thank the caller for engaging with me in that conversation. He mentioned about young people and responsibility. And they, you know, how did he say that about sitting in church?
They're not going to sit still.
Well, you know, I was in church yesterday. They weren't sitting still in church.
Well, you know, that had to do with two other topics that I had thought about. One of them was civility, what happened to it.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, and then the other one has to go with how far do you go to support, you know, beliefs that you don't hold. But those will be for another day.
Another day.
But yeah, okay. You know, that's interesting. I really feel that under this mistaken idea of privacy, and because a lot of people lack interpersonal communication skills, they don't know how to engage each other in conversation anymore. And if people do, it's really this abrupt and almost rude exchange, you know, as if I don't know what to say, so I'm going to mistake brusqueness with efficiency or whatever. But if I had been hired to be a security guard and I didn't have the training, I'd be asking for the training, number one. Number two, you got to step out on the base of the training you get and try to engage people. Or what's the point of being a human being? Because if that's your job and you see these folks acting out, at least give it a try. Go, well, hi, how you doing? You know, as you can see, I'm the security guard here, so there's a certain expectation that I'm going to try to help folks calm down. What's on your mind today?
And, you know,
you're a little loud and rowdy on the bus, and, you know, you're making people nervous, and can we talk about this?
And we don't know anything about that event, which what happened before or after.
Or exactly, whether this person had support and how many kids it was. Because if it was 20, you know, I might be sweating too, you know? And I don't mean to say that I expect them to go up and be all powerful and cease and desist.
Or whether there's some regulations that requires you to act a certain way depending on the number and stuff. So, like I say, you know, we all have difficult jobs, and we need to give people space to do
them. But then, you know, we also as employers need to be supportive. We'll send somebody out there to fight Goliath with a matchstick. It's not going to work.
Mm-hmm. You're listening to KBOO Portland. This is More Talk Radio with Cecil and Celeste. We're talking about privacy and TriMet. Contradiction in term, perhaps.
Well, you know, if you're riding public mass transportation, does that mean you got to give up something?
And, you know, just like people insist on their privacy or like on public buses. So like,
don't sit next to me.
Like, yeah, you know, that position, and, you know, this is my space.
Well, see, I didn't know this is what we didn't know what each other's topic was. And I find it interesting that they interact like this, that there's a juncture. I was watching this show and this man's name was Hack. And he is what's called the father of techno. I think I was watching on a documentary channel, you know, because I'm a nerd. And one of the things he did was he had this guy sit on this piece of foil, this contraption, so it could conduct electricity. And he made music by touching him. Mm. And they used some archival footage of him on, I think it was Whose Line or What's My Line or something like that. And one of the things he talked about, and this, so you know this is back in the 50s, 40s, 50s. You know that we have in this country an exaggerated sense of privacy and space. And so he's touching this man, and music is an intimate emotional exchange in the first place. You ever watch people that are playing it, and you wonder, you know, hey, those faces look like, you know, almost indecent. You know, what do you think it was? It's an emotional exchange. So he's touching this man on his forehead and his shoulders while the man is also playing the piano, and they're making music together. And the music is similar to, like, you know, the little Moog sounds.
Yeah.
So he's rubbing them all over, and you're looking at this, and you're thinking, and they even articulate this, I guess this is not going to be a popular instrument because here in this country we don't like being touched, you know. And so we talk about different levels of privacy and what we're willing to do to protect this really vague and ambiguous concept. And we talk about it like it's a God-given right. And one of the callers characterized it as a, I almost want to say libertarian, concept. And I would beg to differ that we do have a certain right to privacy, but I want to hear how we define it. Now, I'm going to take a very unlikely source to use as expanding upon the concept of privacy, and that's coming out of a Judeo-Christian perspective when it talks about prayer. You go someplace private and do it. You don't do it out in public, like it, from a hypocritical perspective. You know, like, don't do it for show, for posturing, you know, for magnanimous gesture, you know, big gestures. Do it, you know, sincerely, privately, smallly. So there is an idea that some things do happen in private, and that maybe that concept, that little kernel of privacy, can be expanded to encompass other aspects of selfhood. But, you know, I'm like the caller. It's like, you know, I'm not real keen on giving up too much of my information to the state either. But the truth is, they already got it. There's not a thing about you except your thoughts that they don't know.
Well,
hey,
you don't know they don't know
well,
that.
They haven't come and got most of it, so I'm pretty sure they can't.
That they, well, that's another conversation, another program. I'm sure that someone will come call us and share with us the facts.
All right. Oh.
But in the meantime, we'll go to our next caller.
Good morning.
Good morning. Yeah, if I had to subtitle the show, I'd call it Lack of Political Sophistication in the Portland KBOO Listenership. I just do not believe the opinions and that are going on out there. And when you try to nail somebody down, it's very apparent that they haven't even given the word privacy any thought at all.
Mm-hmm.
I would suggest to anybody who's having a problem with this to check out, it's a seminal book in political science.
Mm-hmm.
It's very easy read, most of it.
Mm-hmm.
It's by John Dewey.
John who?
Dewey.
Oh, yeah.
John Dewey. It's called The Public and Its Problems. And he starts out with a very basic premise that the public is created when A does something that involves B. And in our society, to the technological levels that we've achieved, there's very little that A can do that doesn't involve B. And even though that there are things in our Constitution that can be read that are obviously implicit, and please read the Federalist Papers so you can know what exactly the Constitution says, that it's apparent that a lot of the laws, the words in the Constitution, are supposed to create certain things the government can and cannot do and leave the rest to the states or the individual. In other words, whatever the Constitution does not give the government a right to do is left to the public. But we have given a lot of leeway to government. And when you drive your car through my neighborhood, you are becoming, in some circumstances, a possible problem to me. And I want to be sure that somebody knows who you are. So if you don't like it, don't drive.
Well, you know, one of the things that is really interesting about this whole conversation about driving and the reason I asked that caller who was supporting Richard's position was that there are some Oregon statutes, Oregon revised statutes, that specifically address car licensing and titling and all of that. And so I was really surprised that the caller had not at least gone and looked at them. And, you know, just one of them, proof of ownership, that's ORS 803.010, proof of ownership. So when they're talking about there's no laws, I'm not sure what they mean, because with regard to laws in this state, they're called revised statutes.
Yes.
You know, and so there are laws. There are specific laws that say that they should be cars should be licensed and titled. So you know, I'm a little confused here too.
Sure, and that's,
you know,
that's a protection for the not only you know, the owner of the vehicle, but for everybody else around, so that you, yeah. we know who's in that car. And if you don't want to have that information public, then don't drive in the public.
Mm-hmm.
When we agreed to build roads and, you know, increase our ease of transportation, we agreed to certain things tacitly. And one of them is that they will know who's behind the wheel of that deadly chunk of metal.
Which is interesting, because that's where our conversation with mass transit or transportation and privacy intersect.
I agree.
You know, if you don't wish to be held accountable for your actions, then don't drive.
And if you look at this in the light of what the NSA or the NSC has done, then you know, they can. I think that especially within the liberal community, we can understand that the government will do it anyway.
Yeah, I mean, that's true. As I understand, nothing of ours is ours.
That, and as long as they use that information legally, you know, let's pick our battles.
Yeah, yeah.
So this, they obviously, I don't want to get into, and I, you know, the media, the mass media has been directing this conversation toward exactly what we're speaking about here, but I believe it should be on a completely separate topic. It's whether or not that information was used legally. And
yes,
that's where we should be nailing them, not whether or not he should have been able to do it in the first place. Because we'll never nail down the Bush regime on their technological ability to pry into your private life. They're going to do it anyway.
Well, caller, there is one point which I differ. I think that you hit the nail on the head when you said, is it being used legally? But I still maintain that it should be obtained legally as well. And if our government is not going to uphold our laws, you know, then what's the point of even having them? You know, just declare it, you know, the whatever kind of ology or Omni or whatever it is, you know, is it a dictatorship? You know, is it a totalitarian regime? Whatever it is, just declare it, because we got to be able to obtain information just as legally as we use it.
I believe that too. That's a value that I hold dearly. Also, and I also hold honesty dearly. But we can't legislate honesty.
That's true.
We can't legislate a way to stop the NSA from
right.
pointing something from outer space at a pane of glass in your house
mm-hmm.
and listening to the conversation that you're having without any technological devices, phones, computers, anything involved at all. They can do that.
Oh, dude, you know, about 4 years ago, I was telling folks about how you can buy satellite images of your community that are clear enough to read your license plate on your car. Okay? So, yes.
Well, don't leave your car out of your garage then.
I don't even
nope.
care. You know, when I put my name down on the piece of paper that said, this is the vehicle I drive, and they assign me a number, I said, good, I'm good to go. There it is.
Spying is a legalistic term. But if they're,
mm-hmm.
if they're viewing, and so is surveillance, if they're viewing
yeah.
you, if you're doing something that puts your private information or your beliefs out there and someone looks at it, great. You know, if the FBI is listening, the CIA is listening to this conversation on my cell phone, of course they could hear it on the radio
mm-hmm.
also, I don't care. You know, I think that you people are acting unethically. You're un-American.
Mm-hmm.
And please, you know, track my phone call and please try to nail me on some of the things that I say. I think that you people are should really be in jail.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
You don't like it tough.
I agree. You know,
thank you.
I'm not going to let that affect what I do in my life. I'm not going to let that affect my opinions. I'm not going to let that affect my writing, the way I use the internet. I'm going to try to use my freedoms, and if somebody wants to spy on me while I'm using them, fine.
Well, I think
try to come after me for it.
I think one of the radical things you're saying is tossing this whole thing on its head. One is by asserting that I am who I am, and this is, you know, I'm going to do what I'm going to do. And it's sort of like, for some people, say, my life isn't an open secret.
That's right. And if some weasel in the government wants to come after me for it, I'm not going to hide it, you know. And if it really, if it takes this going into court to make this okay, to make this socially acceptable, to say derogatory things about that jackass in office, fine.
You know, one thing that I find fascinating, looking at certain social movements in terms of movements which go against powerful entities or governments, some social movements I find most fascinating are those movements which choose to rebel in a very open manner, so that things such as secret meetings is not there. You see some testimonies, and particularly I think in the 50s and 60s of those who organize against the government, having very public meeting, you know, like going to the police station and saying, this is what we're going to do, this is what we're saying, and sort of like laying it all open so that they have nothing to hide, and that therefore those who would come against them will be held accountable.
Sure, and you know, politics works at some very deep psychological levels. It's everything is not on paper. And, you know, I think the American public is just so politically unsophisticated. The Europeans are way ahead of us. Don't think of this as something that needs to be legislated. Do it. Mm-hmm. There's so much in our world that's, you know, like, for instance, that we know that it's illegal for some jackbooted thugs in the government to come bust our door down without a warrant. It doesn't happen because we know that. As soon as people don't know that, it doesn't matter if it's written down somewhere, it's going to happen.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Okay, things happen.
Oh, go ahead. I was just trying to wrap you up because we only had a few minutes and a couple of more callers.
Okay, well, I'll let the other callers get a chance. Thank you.
But thank you for your call and for your points. And it is 8:48 a.m. here on KBOO Portland at 9 o'clock. The Old Mo Variety Hour features an interview with James Gregory, professor of history and author of the new book, The Southern Diaspora, How the Great Migrations of Black and White Southerners Transformed America. Well, you can find evidence of that here in the Pacific Northwest. Mm-hmm. And then Chris Tinzig of the Middle East Report will also be interviewed. 10 o'clock, Health Watch, Dr. David Naiman interviews herbalist and writer Andrew Gaddard, author of the Healing Skin Disorders, Natural Treatments for Dermatological Conditions. 10:30, Chris Andre hosts Earth Watch. And at 11 o'clock, Democracy Now! Hear about the Total Information Awareness, a plan to create the world's largest surveillance database to track your phone calls, purchases, internet uses, reading material, banking transactions, which has been quietly continuing at the NSA. And human rights attorneys Clive Stafford Smith and Michael Ratner discuss the detainees' issues. Oh, how timely our conversation is.
Well, you know why? Because they planted that thing
in our subconscious. They might have planted that in my subconscious. I had some wild dreams, so it's quite possible I could be the subject of mind control.
Mind control.
Okay. I must be rebelling, huh?
Rebelling.
Only probably within parameters. Wow, that's scary, too.
Okay.
Let's go to our next caller while we have some time. Good morning.
Good morning.
Hi.
How are you?
Oh, I am good. And I want to talk about the cop a little bit and go from there.
Actually, we got topics already. We're talking about either privacy or TriMet. Is that what you're talking about?
Well, I'm talking about the cop that was on TriMet that got off.
Oh, okay. I wasn't sure which cop you meant.
Because there was young people there.
Right.
There's a couple of things, you know, I have a problem with. And then I was thinking, number one is that we have a problem in this town is that when the cops are scared, people get killed. And
I can't even argue with that. Go ahead.
And I think this goes to training. I was looking for this piece of paper. It's a notes I had from a class I took from this guy named Reverend Prescott. And he was talking about persuasive speaking, and it was and it had this L-A-R-A, listen, affirm, respect, and answer, I think it was, this method of speaking to people. And I think we have a problem here with the training of our police officers. When they go for the gun, they go for it, or the taser or whatever, which is an escalation. instead of using linguistic or intellectual abilities to de-escalate a situation. And, you know, it doesn't always have to do with brute physical force. There's another kind of force that's effective. You know, I know a couple of women out here in North Portland that stopped some bulldozers about 3 weeks ago. And they were, a developer was illegally excavating in their neighborhood to put up a five-story building that wasn't allowed. Randy Leonard had told him, no, you don't get a permit to do this. It's an R5 neighborhood, blah, blah, blah. Mm-hmm. And the guy said, well, I'll just go dig the hole and start building and see what they do. And so a couple of women, they went out there and a couple of big little women, okay, and they stood in front of the machinery, and they stopped it. And one of them hung onto a dump truck so that they couldn't go driving around. And so there's people, you know, different ways of people doing things. And this matter is coming back up again, and that's sort of why I wanted to call in. And so it's Tuesday, tomorrow, from next 6 to 9 p.m. at the McMinimum St. John's Pub, the theater one there at Ivanhoe and Richmond. There's going to be a meeting for people to learn how your neighbors were able to successfully convince the city to rescind an illegal permit, learn about the developer's attempt to reverse the city's decision, and find out how you can directly support your neighbor's ongoing efforts to prevent the developer from constructing an illegal building in the neighborhood.
Okay, caller, so where... Ivanhoe and Richmond.
Right. It's
tomorrow, 6:30 to 9 o'clock.
Yeah, it's the St. John's McMinimum's Pub. And apparently this is going to be going back to city council, or there's going to be a hearing on Thursday. And so there's some people stood up and literally put their bodies on the line for the neighborhood. Mm-hmm. And they incurred some legal costs and all this other stuff. But it's, you know, now it needs for the neighborhood to come together. So.
All righty. Well, thank you for your call and for the information.
It is so important for us to realize our own power to effect change. And it's not necessarily by might. And there are ways that people can make enormous change by persuasion. We have a couple of minutes.
We got time for one brief call.
Okay. Good morning, caller, and thank you for sharing your knowledge with us.
Good morning.
Well, thank you. Yes, I just got in part of this, but I had to snicker about the DMV.
Mm-hmm.
Because I personally was totaled by an individual right here in Portland, by an individual that didn't have registration on his vehicle, didn't have a license, didn't have insurance. He ran a red light, totaled me out, and the Portland police wrote him up for driving without insurance only.
Oh, I would have fought that.
Oh, but they didn't, and they said the comment was, it's between you and your insurance company. But
wholly true.
Well, believe me, I was just in the DMV on the 28th at Lloyd Center. I walked in because of the optional titling program.
Right.
And I asked the lady where the form was for it, and she said, you'll have to ask this gentleman. She went over and told him. He came over, and he yelled at me, told me I was trespassed and I need to get out of the building. And I go, who am I? You know who you are. I mean, made a complete scene. And when I finally, after about seven times of who am I, he turned around and went back in the back room. He came out and says, you're Richard Kenick.
I go, already.
And I said, no, I'm not. Here's my license. I had the regional person, I filed a complaint against this gentleman.
Mm-hmm.
And you talk about privacy. They took a week, they turned around and said, you're completely right, we're sorry, etc. And then I said, well, what are you going to do to him? Well, that's a personnel issue. And here's a man that embarrassed me. I was escorted out of Lloyd Center from the DMV downstairs all the way up to the food center by a security guard. So privacy is one thing, but I can tell you, I've seen through this episode with my accident that we have a problem in this city, in this state, about registration and licensing. I saw a letter from an assistant city attorney.
Okay, caller. Well, we're about out of time.
Well,
and
as I say,
thank
you
for your call. Ooh, that was abrupt.
I think we cut him off a little bit too.
No, we don't have time, engineer, for two more calls. We got less than 4 minutes here.
And we
got three minutes and some seconds to
I'd like to make a transition.
That's
and
right.
Exit and thank you all for this interesting conversation about public.
But I have a question. Is it me or do callers have a tendency not to want to address topics? And I put this to our listening audience because I was more than happy to amend my position regarding a moratorium on 9/11 conversation because people were able to impress upon me how important this was because it was a traumatic event still in many people's psyche and there was a need to express and to heal. But there still seems to be some degree of waffling on the responsibility of the caller to address the points that we set up. This is supposed to be a forum to discuss ideas, that's true, but we should agree that the rules of engagement are topics at hand. And if you want a topic on, talk to the host and see if they're willing to put it on. There are so many things that you can't expect us to cover every single thing. And we cover the things in which we both have an interest in if we find there's a pressing need. Case in point, our guest for next week.
Our guest for next week is Rabbi Michael Lerner, who's many of you know, it's affiliated with Tikkun. His book is The Left Hand of God, Taking Back Our Country from the Religious Right.
And so we hope that you will be intrigued and call and be engaged. But please stay on topic.
Well, and
because we have open forum, and open forum is just
anything.
For that. You can talk about anything.
And sometimes why we ask to stay on topic because it'll do your subject more.
It gives it more respect and more justice.
If
right.
If you have it more time to talk about it.
Yeah, and you don't feel like you're being heard, and you don't have me going, but what's that got to do with this? But anyway. Thank you all for your calls,
thank
whether
you
we
so
agree
much.
Or not. And as one caller suggested, do your research so that you know what you're talking about. Don't exalt things without having the due diligence. You can simply go online and do a search and get your information so we can have an engaged conversation on your community connection, KBOO Portland.
Thank you. See you next week.